this type of dialogue has really been helpful for me to utilize in my own practice. And I think these are the conversations where with therapy, where historically it's been this machismo, I'm a man, I don't need therapy, I'm gonna tough it out. That's totally changed. That paradigm has shifted. And I'm really happy about that, because I really do think that's another way in which we're evolving as humans, is that we're starting to have a little bit more empathy for each other. And that's a key component to, you know, being a good educator and also being a good leader, is you're having that empath part of you, like, really connect with others.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my guest today is David Zitten. David is the director of special education at Olive Grove Charter School, and that is in Santa Barbara County, California. David, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit about Olive Grove Charter School and your journey into special education.
Olive Grove Charter School is located in Santa Barbara County, and there's four locations: Santa Maria, Lompoc, Buellton, and Santa Barbara. These learning centers are in a hybrid model for an independent study program, which allows students the capacity to go in person to get supports for interventions and tutoring and academic help, and at the same time give them the flexibility to be online as well. So it's definitely something that has sort of solidified in the last 10 years as being, you know, accessible for students that maybe live in agricultural areas where schools are maybe spread apart, for students who have social and emotional needs that do better in this type of setting when there's no distractions, and overall just for the ability for students to work as needed and also get their education. So it's really been for all students, it's for all general education students, but for special education, we've really had to adapt to this type of environment, because when you do interventions like this, you have to be creative and you have to be really innovative in trying to make sure that students are getting the learning they need.
Yeah, we have, I think I told you, I'm a speech pathologist of 31 years, and I've been doing online since 2011, and I have worked with this model since 2011, so for the last 14 years, and it is a fantastic model for many, many, many families, and I've seen so much success. So kudos to you guys for making it work and work well. So,
thank you. Yeah, it's definitely been a journey for myself. I've seen pretty much all the different types of models up until this point, and you know, there was this definitely some fear around it when it first started. When I was working in LAUSD, there was this kind of fear around, oh, independent study and special education, that's not going to work, you know, because how are they going to receive services with fidelity if they're online? But, you know, it really is a combination of having the right programming, the right type of training, and also making sure that, you know, holding students accountable to be on screen, to have, you know, interactions where they're kind of communicating virtually, and making sure that those, you know, services are delivered correctly. I think there's definitely, it's not a one size fit all, right?
Right.
It's for students, yeah, for who maybe just do better without the distractions, mm-hmm, of, you know, having a classroom full of students, or maybe it's more advantageous for a student who is like has social, you know, fears about going to school. And a lot of this has come from, obviously, you know, the distance learning that we were in when COVID happened. And there is some kind of runoff from that. But it is something we're all evolving into and adapting to, as this may be the new normal moving forward. Yeah,
for sure. And I love the fact that it is individualized, right? That's the whole point of an IEP, is that it's an individualized education plan. So definitely there are students. And I know there were stories that came out of COVID, like children that were just failing in a traditional model. And all of a sudden you get them home and you take away all of the distractions and whatever it was that was making learning difficult. And all of a sudden they're A students. And, you know, and I know those kids didn't go back to traditional schools because it was like, hey, this is something that parents were not aware of that was an option. So, and I know there are schools that we work with right now that went from just providing in-person to realizing, oh, there are kids that are successful now because of this model. So let's do some of that too. So I love the fact that educators are seeing that there's lots of different ways that kids learn.
Absolutely. There's so many different ways that they can access information. And we have so many visual learners that really do well in this program because of the way that they process information. They can see it and kind of understand it a little bit better than when they have all the auditory distractions of a classroom. And I think I could segue into sort of my journey.
Absolutely.
Into
yeah.
I started in a special day class setting. And working at a non-public school. And I think that kind of set the stage for me in terms of understanding really the meaningful work of special education. I mean, starting off as a TA, working as a one-to-one with a student who, at times he would perseverate as if he was driving a car and he had his pencil as a stick shift. And the teacher's like, we just can't get through to him. He's just not able to focus. And somehow the magical energy of just working with him and working with me and feeling a certain sense of comfort after we developed a relationship, he was able to access his learning and he stopped driving while instruction was happening. So that I saw was a great impact. And as I worked in a special day class for 5 years, I just found creative ways to deliver instruction because sometimes you have to think outside the box, you have to be creative. And I tried to bring I would teach history and I tried to bring the history alive to the students and we would role play scenarios, a war or if it was the gold rush, getting the students involved and engaged really helped. And just my way of delivering the instruction, making it fun. And yeah. I did the best. That is the key.
Yeah,
which
for sure.
Is a little trickier in the independent study program when it's virtual. Then that's the piece why we really want them to come in person to our learning mm-hmm. centers. So that we can get them more hands-on and interactive and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So where'd you go from there? So you were 5 years in that classroom. Then what happened?
Then what happened is a friend of mine reached out to me who actually was a principal. It so happened to be we're both in education. Hey, I could really use this special education coordinator and director. We're building a school from scratch. It's a charter school. Everest Value School. And I was like, all right, hey, let's do this. I'm willing to take this on. And so I went from just working with students to more managing teachers and working with general education. And there were so many challenges in working in downtown Los Angeles because we were trying to find a school site that would be a permanent school site. We were working out of an Emmanuel Presbyterian Baptist Church in downtown Los Angeles. And with that, our facilities were rough. I mean, when it rained, the roof would leak water. And, this is basically a Gothic cathedral where film studios shoot there all the time because it's so amazing. It felt like we were almost like teaching in Harry Potter world in a way.
Wow.
Yeah. It was wild.
I bet.
So with that, what we did was we had probably 10 to 12 locations that we thought would be the permanent site. But every time we tried, something would fail, whether it was, maybe there was oil underneath and there's all these zoning permits that you have to have and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Finally, yeah. We found a site and we were able to build a school from scratch. And with that, we were able to design the school the way in which we wanted it to look architecturally and also just sort of setting up sort of the culture of the classroom. And we were able to finally move in there. It was just a huge transition. Now, the hardest part too, is also getting the buy-in of the parents to be like, hey, we're moving from point A to point B and getting them all to move there. And so there's just so many logistics to it, and just so grateful that we were able to get the community, to get the politicians, to get the school district to agree to this. And also at the same time, renew our charter.
Yeah.
So there were so many moving elements. And because of that heavy lift, I feel like it was a crash course, sort of a 101 in what it takes to be like a leader, and, and what it takes to develop relationships with some cultural differences that, and then, I mean, in this, you know, demographic, we have a lot of population from El Salvador, Guatemala, Mexico, and me as a special ed coordinator, that I'm Caucasian, building those relationships with those parents to earn their trust, and that, you know, having conversations with interpreters so that they understood what our message was. And, you know, we come from like an authentic heart center place, in that we're trying to provide, you know, quality services in a quality school and so on. After working there for 7 years, that I wanted to go into consulting. And I started my own consulting business as an independent contractor. And that's when I started to look around, and I found Olive Grove Charter School. That has sort of been my journey. And it's each step of the way has had super duper challenges to it. But, you know, the thing about it is, you know, you really have to have a lot of tenacity in this type of role. You know, there's such a high burnout rate in special education, that I think, you know, it's really a matter of finding the right type of admin that's going to support you, finding that work-life balance, which is such a challenge for so many, as especially when you work from home and you have to find the boundaries that exist. And then I think making sure that you come in with a positive attitude and a light spirit, because things can get heavy. And when you are helping students of all different demographics, all different cultural backgrounds, it can weigh on you. And so you have to find ways to find the good in all of it, you know, because it can be, it can be hard. It can be really hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it can. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that work-life balance, that's something that we talk about all the time, you know, making sure, you know, and education is, you're right, you're a white guy, and I'm a white girl. And sometimes that makes a difference, you know, it just is. But, you know, it doesn't matter. We're still servants. We have a servant's heart, and we want to serve the kids. And when you have that piece, that's the most important part. It doesn't matter, you know, where you grew up or what your demographics are. It's about serving human beings and wanting them to be successful. And it sounds like you've been really successful at helping those kids to be successful. And that's kudos to you for that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that is the key piece there. Yeah, I think it's that heart center, because when you go student first and you think about their educational benefit, I think that's the conversation you should always have, like within your own conscious mind, is, okay, look, this student is really struggling in our setting, and we've tried this, that, and the other intervention, and we've exhausted all of our curriculum, and we've tried all these supports, and if it's not working, that's a hard conversation to have with your superintendent or your principal, saying, hey, you know, ethically, we need to do right by this student. And if you always come from that center, and because financially, money is a thing, right? We're always, they're always looking at budgets, and they're looking at ways to cut costs. And no principal wants to hear, oh gosh, are you saying we need to send this student to like a non-public school, or do we need to send this student? And like, you know, luckily, I've avoided that in my career. So not a ton. We haven't had much of that because we've learned to adapt to mainstream students into our inclusive environment and keeping them involved and engaged. We've had students in the past where teachers like, how in the world are we going to support this student? He's making all these sounds in the back of my classroom, and he has these severe needs, and how will he navigate this? And I say, well, we're going to have to make some adjustments, but it's not going to completely overhaul your whole curriculum. We are going to put him on this alternative curriculum, and he's going to have a one-to-one. And It's no easy task. It's a huge financial task, and it's also a huge burden on the teacher at times when they're distracted by what's going on with the students. So it is something that takes a lot of collaboration, cooperation, and just support. It takes a lot of training as well. And these are the types of challenges we face, but we have to find ways to evolve and move it forward so that we do feel a sense of community. And in those classrooms where those students do go, where at first they might have been outliers and the other students might be like, oh gosh, look at little Johnny over there. The whole culture changes. Like the kids are like, oh, let me help little Johnny. Let me get involved. And then that in itself changes the way in which those students view sort of this idea of community and helping others. And then it puts certain, I want to say, values in them that they may not otherwise have. Yeah.
Yeah. I've talked to a couple of SPED directors who are all inclusive, and that whole concept and how it affects everybody, you know, the teachers and the children and the SPED teachers and the collaboration that happens with the gen ed teachers. And it's just, it really is, it's a great thing. I think it's a great thing. I think there are so many different ways to educate children. And it's not, we have to step away from that 1950s model where it's, you know, a teacher at the front of the room and kids in rows and desks, right? You know, that doesn't work anymore in 2025. That's not the reality of schools and what they need to do for these kids. And it's exciting to be in a time, you know. Even if you go back, I've been, like I said earlier, I think I said I've been a therapist for 31 years. The way I do therapy now versus the way I did therapy 30 years ago, night and day, right?
Night and day.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to note on that. It really was my mom, who was a therapist, who really taught me, you know, some holistic approach of like sort of working through emotions and talking through your feelings. And this type of dialogue has really been helpful for me to utilize in my own practice. And I think these are the conversations where with therapy, where historically it's been this machismo, I'm a man, I don't need therapy, I'm going to tough it out. That's totally changed. That paradigm has shifted. And I'm really happy about that because I really do think that's another way in which we're evolving as humans, is that we're starting to have a little bit more empathy for each other. And that's a key component to, you know, being a good educator and also being a good leader, is you're having that empath part of you, like really connect with others. Yeah.
Fantastic. That is fantastic. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So I have one other question. I try to end most podcasts with it. So I'm going to lay it on you, and you can't say money. No money. It's not allowed. Because we all need more money. That's just the reality. So if you could miraculously solve one challenge in your school, what would you want to solve?
That's a good question. There is actually something I wish I could change, and it's actually a political thing. AB 84 is a new bill that's going to possibly go to the legislative branch in the California government, and that is that it is possibly going to impact the way in which independent study programs receive funds, because there is a push for some political parties that independent study programs are not like good programs for our students. But this would really put an impact on the way in which our students receive services that need those services, because I can tell you so many stories where independent study program has saved the lives of so many students because of what's going on in their very complicated life. And this bill would take funding away and directly impact independent study programs that are non-classroom based. So that's why we really need to kind of advocate and get the word out so that this bill does not pass. I think historically there have been a few sketchy independent study programs out there that have done some shady
damage.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Damage, yeah. And that because of that, it has impacted the way in which people perceive what independent study actually is. And it also has to do with information and how they receive that information, because we immediately think, well, every independent study is just like this. No, it's not. No. It's just an isolated scenario. So if there was one thing I could change, I wish I could change the perspective in which or in the politics in which it is viewed for independent study program, because I really do see the value in it. It really has changed lives. And when we go to graduation next week and hear some of these stories and the triumphs that these students have overcome by being in a program, some of which may have been, you know, unexpected moms, or maybe some of which who are doing their work out of a car because they were homeless, it's helped them get diploma and move on in their life to their next phase. And so it really is impactful work that we're doing in the independent study program. And it's important for those that are in the powers that be, you know, understand the significance of having them, and that a bill like this would take away funding. And so that's why it's such an important thing to, and I don't mean to bring politics into the podcast.
No, no,
but
I agree with you. Yeah. If it's, you know, I think we want people to know what's happening in education. That's the point of Brighter Together. I'm not afraid of talking about tough topics. You know, it is one of those things, and it will impact students. And I know there's two sides to every coin, but this is one that I know I've seen the impact that these independent studies and these charter schools in California. I've worked in California since, like I said, since 2011. And I know there have been other bills that have come up against charter schools, and they've all failed. So I am really prayerful that this one, again, that people will, and if you are involved and can make changes and you're hearing this podcast, please make a difference, because it does matter. And these kids matter. And I am of the opinion that every child matters. So, you know, let's not do something that's going to harm or make it difficult for a child in one of these schools. And there are thousands. It's not just a couple of kids. There are thousands and thousands of kids that are going to be impacted by this bill. So so let's hope that and pray that cool heads prevail and the reality of what's happening out there, the truth of what's happening out there gets out there, because that's what we need for these kids.
Well said. I agree 100%. And I appreciate you taking the time and reaching out to me and giving me this opportunity to kind of tell a little bit about myself and my journey into this career. And I'm hoping that other special educators can continue the good work they're doing. And you know, find that work-life balance that is so important, so you don't burn out.
Don't burn yourself out. Yeah.
Give
yourself a break. You have, and know that the work that you're doing matters, because any special education educator out there, it matters. Well, David, it has been a pleasure, a true pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for your insight. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for being that white guy out there in a world that's not always as easy as it can be, but you're doing it. And you're that one unicorn that we don't get to see as much. So keep doing it. Keep up the great work. And I know that kids have been impacted, and you know, we're brighter together, right? That's the whole point of this podcast. So thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.